Hi, and welcome back to A Twist of Fate. This week, we are talking about Herbert Mullen and Joel Rifkin. Herbert Mullen was born on April 18, 1947, in Salinas, California. The Mullen family had moved to a farming community outside of San Francisco when he was 5 years old. Martin William, or Bill Mullen, his father, was a World War II hero, who sold furniture, taught Mullen how to use a gun, and told him war stories. He was a strict man, but wasn't abusive. When the family had moved to Felton in Santa Cruz County, Mullen had switched schools and was pretty well liked there. He had friends, a girlfriend, and played varsity football. After he had graduated in 1965, he decided to join the military. However, around that time, Mullen's best friend, Dean Richardson, had been killed in a car accident. After that, his entire personality changed. He started to build shrines of his friends, spent hours alone with them, and became completely obsessed with reincarnation. He started believing that his friend's death was a part of some grand plan the universe had, and even went to change his college major to philosophy and spent time studying Eastern religions. Mullen and his girlfriend broke up in 1968 when he had told her about questioning his sexuality. That next year, his family had admitted him to the Mendocino State Hospital, however left not long after and spent the next few years drifting around California, working small jobs and checking himself into mental hospitals for short periods of time. Mullen had even worked as a boxer before he had to be forced out of the ring because he wouldn't stop beating on his opponent. He started to get into different lifestyles. He tried out yoga, meditation, microbiotic diets, attempted to join the priesthood and believed in legalizing LSD and marijuana, and had used both, including meth. In court, Mullen had openly said that he wasn't only bisexual, but bipolitical, bicultural, bispiritual, and even falsely claimed to be biracial. Mullen had started suffering from schizophrenic episodes, hearing his father's voice not only telling him to kill, but to burn himself with cigarettes. His spree started in October of 1972. He finally cracked and had beaten Lawrence White, a homeless hitchhiker, to death with a baseball bat. He picked up Mary Guilfoyle only 2 weeks later while she had been hitchhiking. He killed her in his car before he had pulled over to the side of the road, took her body into the woods where he cut his way to her intestines to examine for pollution, and hung them in the tree branches. When her remains were finally found several months later, it was thought that she had been another victim of Edmund Kemper, who had been active around the same area at the same time. 4 days after he killed Mary, Mullen had decided to go to St. Mary Catholic Church and confess to Father Henry Tomei. However, Mullen also came to the conclusion that he offered himself as a sacrifice and stabbed the priest to death before leaving the church. His paranoia had kept going downhill, even after he had stopped doing drugs. Mullen had killed someone he knew from high school, Jim Genera, who he used to get drugs from, and started to blame him for everything bad going on in his life. He had gone to see Jim on January 25th, 1973. However, he only had the man's old address and had gone there and had gotten his new address from the woman Kathy Francis, who now lived there before he had killed her and her two sons. That night, Mullen had gone and killed Jim and his wife. Because Jim and the woman's husband were known drug dealers, their murders weren't considered drug-related, and Mullen wasn't a suspect. Not even 2 weeks later, he had seen 4 teenage boys camping in Henry Cowell Redwood State Park, and had gone up to them telling the boys that he was a park ranger before telling them that they needed to leave because they were contaminating the forest. He opened fire after they had blown him off, shooting the 4 boys one by one. Mullen later had said that he had asked the boys telepathically if he could murder them and that they had given him permission to do so. On February 13th, he used a rifle that he took from the teenage boys' campsite to kill a man named Fred Perez. A witness called for help, and when Mullen was arrested, he didn't put up any kind of fight. However, once he was being questioned, he would yell silence as a reply to any sort of question. When Edmund Kemper was finally arrested, the two of them had cells next to each other, and Kemper had accused Mullen of stealing his dumping grounds. Mullen was charged with 6 counts of murder when the police had found the evidence in his apartment. Four more counts when the bodies of the campers were found, and had also confessed to the first three murders to his spree. However, he wasn't charged for those. Mullen's trial started on July 30th, 1973. He had already admitted to all of the crimes, so the trial was more focused on whether or not he was eligible for the insanity plea. He had covered his tracks, which shows premeditated crimes, which was pointed out by the prosecutor, Chris Cottle, while the defense used the argument that Mullen's delusions caused him to kill. On August 19th, after 14 hours of deliberation, the jury found him guilty of first-degree murder for the murders of Jim Genera and Kathy Francis. Due to them being premeditated, 8 counts of second-degree murder for the other killings, due to the jury coming to the conclusion that they were committed out of impulse. The Santa Clara County District's Attorney's Office had also charged him with the murder of Henry Tomei. The trial for this crime started on December 11th. Mullen pleaded guilty to second-degree murder after he had originally pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity to first-degree murder. He was then given a sentence of life in prison and had been denied parole 8 times since 1980. While in custody, he had said that the only reason he committed these murders were as an attempt to save the environment. Dr. David Marlowe from University of California, Santa Cruz, had diagnosed Mullen as suffering from schizophrenic reaction paranoid type. Herbert Mullen and Edmund Kemper were serial killers who were both active at the same time and in the same area. They were in the same prison. Kemper had described Mullen as having a lot of pain and anguish while calling him a kindred spirit during an interview. Kemper would get Mullen to trust him by using his own experience as a killer. Kemper had once said to Mullen, "Herbie, I know what happened. Don't give that bullshit about earthquakes and don't give me that crap about God was telling you. I says you couldn't even be talking to me now if God was talking to you because of the pressure I'm putting on you right now. These little shocking insights into what you did, God would start talking to you right now if you were that kind of ill, because I grew up with people like that." Now let's talk about Joel Rifkin. Joel Rifkin was born on January 20th, 1959. His parents were young, not married college students that had put him up for adoption. He was adopted 3 weeks later by Bernard and Jeanne Rifkin, who lived on Long Island. Rifkin had a lot of trouble in school. He struggled in classes because of his learning disabilities and also struggled making friends because of his poor social skills. He would be the target of bullying due to his poor posture and how slow he would walk. His classmates had started calling the teen Turtle. Everyone simply assumed that because he was a slow learner that he wasn't very smart. However, when he had his IQ tested, he tested a score of 128. The teen just didn't have the proper help so that he could actually succeed in classes. Rifkin decided rather than depending on friends or family, he would only depend on himself and started to self-isolate. The more isolated he became, the more troubled he became. He graduated from East Meadow High School in 1977, and from then until 1984, he would hop from college to college because of bad grades. This is when he started taking interest in prostitutes. Rifkin would skip classes and any job he would have just to obsess about them. On February 20th, 1987, his adopted father, Bernard, had died from prostate cancer. On the 2-year anniversary of his father's death, Rifkin murdered Heidi Balk in her East Meadow home. He had dismembered her body by removing her teeth and fingertips. He had put her head in a paint can that he had left in the woods on a golf course, took and left her legs further up north before he had thrown her torso and arms into the East River. Heidi's head was found on March 5, 1989, on the 7th hole of the golf course. Her remains went unidentified until 2013. Over the next 4 years, Rifkin killed at least 16 more women. When he was arrested in 1993, he had been implicated in Heidi's murder. On June 24, 1993, Rifkin picked up Tiffany Bresceni, who had been working as a prostitute on Allen Street in Manhattan. She had been with her boyfriend Dave Rubenstein, a punk rock musician. When Rifkin approached her, she told Dave that she would be back in 20 minutes. When Tiffany didn't show back up, her boyfriend called the police and gave them the description of Rifkin's 1984 Mazda pickup truck. Unknown to her boyfriend, Rifkin had already strangled Tiffany before he drove to his mother's house to get a tarp and some rope. Back at his house, he had left her body in the garage in a tarp for 3 days in the summer heat. While on his way to dump her body, officers had noticed the pickup truck didn't have a license plate and tried to pull him over. However, Rifkin instead led them on a high-speed chase. When he was finally pulled over, officers started noticing the foul smell coming from the trunk, and that's when Tiffany's body was found. While in custody, he confessed to 17 murders. In 1994, Rifkin was found guilty of 9 counts of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 203 years in prison. At a 1996 hearing, he had apologized for the murders and even admitted to being a monster. The now 62-year-old is still in prison at Clinton Correctional Facility in New York. This has been A Twist of Fate. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, if you have any questions or requests, feel free to message me. Have a good day.